I want you to put yourself in this scenario for a second. Imagine you're sitting at your desk.
Right.
You know, maybe you have a cup of coffee and you are reading this incredibly well-researched, just brilliantly structured, highly technical article.
Oh, we've all found those.
Yeah.
The ones that just flow.
Exactly. It's flowing perfectly. The arguments are tight. The insights are like genuinely shifting your perspective on your industry.
Yeah.
And you are thinking to yourself that the author really nailed this. Like, they are a genius.
A total expert.
Right. So you get all the way to the final paragraph, you scroll down to the bottom of the page, and there it is.
The label.
The label. A little unassuming label that just says AI assisted.
Yeah.
Now, be honest with yourself about the psychology of this exact moment. In that fraction of a second, does your brain suddenly value the work a little bit less?
Oh, absolutely it does. It's almost involuntary.
Right. Do you find yourself instantly assuming that the author just typed a quick sentence into a prompt box, pressed a button, and went out to a long, leisurely lunch while the machine did all the heavy lifting? It is a visceral reaction for most people right now.
It really is.
We see that label, and our brains instantly rewrite the narrative of how that piece of work came into existence.
We strip away the human sweat.
Exactly. We strip away the sweat and replace it with a magic wand. And the problem is that the label itself doesn't offer any nuance at all.
None.
It doesn't tell you if the AI was used to, you know, just check spelling,
yeah,
or format a bibliography,
or generate the entire conceptual framework of the piece.
Right. You have no idea.
And because of that lack of nuance, we default to the worst case scenario.
We always do.
We assume AI assistance means zero human effort. And that is the massive public misconception we are dismantling today in this deep dive.
It's such an important topic.
It really is. We are exploring an incredibly timely piece published just this month, August 2026.
Fresh off the press. Yeah, by Rob Van Linde. He is a Dutch practitioner in agility, AI, and innovation, currently based in Germany. And he has written this just phenomenal breakdown of this exact phenomenon.
He really gets to the core of it.
He does. He's looking squarely at what happens when legal transparency collides with public perception.
Which, as we know, is happening right now across Europe.
Right, the new regulations.
Exactly. The European Union's transparency and watermarking rules under the EU AI Act are now in full force.
We are officially out of the transitional phase.
We are. This means that visible labels and invisible metadata, like those cryptographic signatures embedded into the code of images and text files.
Technical reports, everything.
Everything. They are going to be everywhere. The C2PA standards, the Coalition for Content Provenance and Authenticity.
That's a mouthful.
It is. But those standards are now integrated into basically every major publishing platform. If a generative model touched the work, the digital paper trail is permanently attached.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because on the surface, that sounds like a total victory for consumers, right?
It does. It sounds like exactly what we asked for.
Yeah, we want to know what is human, what is machine, and what is a hybrid. But Rob makes this incredibly compelling case that this transparency is currently creating a very dangerous illusion.
A huge illusion. The legislators who drafted the EU AI Act, they wanted accountability.
Sure.
But the public translates accountability into a lack of human effort.
Yes. And Rob points out that this risks cementing what he calls a deeply flawed public misconception.
Which is?
It's the belief that working with AI is merely typing a single prompt and having a finished masterpiece handed to you on a silver platter.
Oh, man. Handed to you on a silver platter. That phrase just perfectly captures the arrogance of the observer, doesn't it?
It really does. It's like to anyone standing on the outside who isn't in the trenches doing complex technical work, that AI-assisted label literally just looks like a cheat code.
A total shortcut.
Yeah.
They see a watermark, and they do not think about legal compliance with a transparency directive.
No, they think the author cheated.
Exactly.
It makes me think of, you know, the one they put an asterisk next to a baseball player's home run record?
Oh, that's a perfect analogy.
Right. People see that asterisk and they don't look at the thousands of hours of batting practice.
Or the strategy or the physical exertion.
Nothing. They just assume it means a performance-enhancing shortcut. They think you just, I don't know, walked up to the plate, let the steroids swing the bat, and took the credit.
And with AI, people look at the chat interface, that simple blinking text box, and assume the workflow is just leaning into the microphone and saying, hey, computer, write me a good book about technology.
Right. And then the computer just spits it out.
And then it prints money. But that asterisk analogy gets to the heart of how a label devalues the human creator.
It does.
But the reality of the technology is what completely shatters that illusion. The one prompt masterpiece is a total myth.
A complete myth.
When you actually try to execute a task of substance using a single prompt, the underlying mechanics of large language models guarantee failure.
Guarantee it. Because generative models are, at their core, probabilistic engines.
Yes. They are predicting the next most likely word based on the vast, average distribution of their training data.
They're just playing the odds.
Exactly. And Rob argues a fundamental truth here. He says, AI does not do the thinking for you. It reflects the cognitive rigor you put into it.
Okay, let's unpack that term, cognitive rigor, because I think that's the crux of this whole deep dive.
It absolutely is.
If these models are just probabilistic engines, what happens when you don't apply cognitive rigor? Like, what does the output actually look like if you try to use the one prompt method?
Rob gives a really stark warning about this. He says a blunt prompt yields generic trivia.
Generic trivia. I love that phrasing.
And we can look at the technical reason why. If you give a model a vague instruction, it searches the thickest part of its probability curve.
A middle of the bell curve.
Exactly. It pulls the most common, most frequently repeated sentiments from the internet. The result is text that sounds, you know, superficially plausible.
Right. It possesses perfect grammar.
It utilizes impressive vocabulary.
But it remains completely hollow.
It has no teeth. It glosses over complex tensions and presents this sanitized, overly simplified version of reality.
Because nuance and tension exist at the edges of the probability curve, not in the middle.
Precisely.
You know, I always think of it like managing a highly skilled but utterly literal-minded intern.
Oh, I've had a few of those.
Right. Imagine you hire an intern who went to a top university. They read 1,000 books a minute, and they type at the speed of light.
Sounds great on paper.
On paper, yeah. But they have zero life experience, zero strategic vision, and absolutely no understanding of your specific company's goals.
Right.
So if you give that intern a blunt task like, hey, write a report on our market strategy, they will just summarize the Wikipedia entry for your industry.
They'll give you a beautiful, flawless high school essay.
Exactly. The output you get from them is a flawless mirror of the vague instructions you gave them.
That intern analogy really highlights the crucial difference between delegation and orchestration.
Orchestration, yes.
Yeah, you can delegate physical typing to a machine, but you cannot delegate the architecture of thought.
You just can't.
And to see just how intense this orchestration must be, we have to examine the ultimate real-world stress test.
Which brings us back to Rob Van Linde.
Right. Rob isn't writing simple blog posts. He's currently writing a technical book on, quote, multi-vendor agentic systems.
Okay, that phrase, multi-vendor agentic systems, we need some serious decoding there.
It's dense.
Very. Because if we are going to understand why the one prompt myth fails, we really need to understand exactly what it is he's building.
Let's break down the mechanics. An agentic system is fundamentally different from a standard chatbot.
Okay.
How so? A chatbot sits there waiting for your input. It's reactive. But an agentic system, or an AI agent, is given a goal and can autonomously execute a sequence of actions to achieve it.
So it's proactive.
Very. You can write code, run that code, query databases, read the results, and make decisions based on those results without a human prompting it at every single step.
Oh, wow. Okay. And the multi-vendor part.
Multi-vendor means these agents aren't all coming from one single company.
Yeah.
You might have an OpenAI agent handling natural language processing.
Okay.
Communicating via API with an Anthropic agent that is analyzing code.
Right.
Which then pings a local open source model running on a private server to handle highly sensitive data.
So we are talking about a decentralized network of autonomous machine learning models constantly talking to each other and passing data back and forth.
Precisely. It's a complex web.
Mm-hmm.
And Rob's book tackles the massive architectural challenge of ensuring sensitive data remains sovereign within that chaotic environment.
Data sovereignty, that's a huge issue right now.
It's everything. He is specifically focusing on protecting data from unauthorized harvesting by conflicting international legal frameworks.
Right, because different countries have vastly different rules.
Exactly. On one side, you have U.S. surveillance frameworks like the Cloud Act.
Now, remind us how the Cloud Act works, just briefly.
The Cloud Act effectively allows U.S. law enforcement to compel U.S.-based technology companies to hand over data stored on their servers.
Even if the servers aren't in the U.S.
That's the kicker. Regardless of whether those servers are located in the U.S. or in Europe.
Wow. Okay, so that's a massive consideration for a European company.
Huge. And on the other side,
Yeah, what's on the other side?
you have China's CK, the Cyberspace Administration of China.
Okay, and what do they demand?
The CK enforces incredibly strict data localization laws. If data is generated in China, it generally must stay on servers in China.
No exceptions.
Very few. Transferring it out requires intensive state security assessments. So Rob is designing architectures where a European company can use a multi-vendor agentic system without accidentally letting a piece of proprietary code get swept up in a U.S. subpoena.
Or flagged by a Chinese data audit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Simply because an autonomous agent decided it was, more efficient to route a task through an AWS server in Virginia or an Alibaba cloud server in Shenzhen.
Because the agent is just trying to optimize for speed, it doesn't understand international geopolitics.
Precisely. It just wants to finish the task.
Man, that perfectly illustrates the stakes here. If we go back to the idea of the one prompt user trying to navigate this, imagine trying to prompt an AI about the nuances of the US Cloud Act and China's SCAC simultaneously with one sentence.
It would be a disaster.
Right. Hey, AI, write a chapter on how to route data safely between these conflicting jurisdictions.
Within milliseconds, the AI would confidently invent a bilateral data treaty that simply doesn't exist.
It would totally hallucinate a legal loophole.
Without a doubt. And if the AI gets this wrong in the real world, it's not just a typo. It is a fundamental architectural failure.
The system breaks.
If your autonomous agents fail to understand these constraints, your data is exposed. The machine doesn't naturally know how to balance the nuance of European data sovereignty against the heavy-handed surveillance apparatus of global superpowers.
Because it just wants to resolve the prompt quickly. It wants to please you.
Yes.
So, to prevent the AI from hallucinating a catastrophic architectural error, Rob has to execute this relentless three-step workflow.
And this is where the actual cognitive labor happens.
Exactly. This is far removed from the public perception of just pushing a button.
So far removed.
So, let's get into it. Step one is context engineering and architecture. Before a single line is generated, Rob must curate, structure, and feed extensive technical context into the system.
The terminology here is vital. Curate and structure. Dumping raw data into a model is not context engineering.
You can't just attach a zip file.
No. If you just take 50 PDFs about international cybersecurity law and feed them into a model's context window, you overwhelm its attention mechanism.
It loses the plot.
The model will lose track of the core instructions in the noise of the data.
Okay.
So curating means being ruthlessly selective. Rob has to weed out outdated documentation, contradictory legal opinions, or, irrelevant tangents.
Right, and then comes the structuring part. You have to teach the model how to actually read the information you just curated.
Yes, you have to give it a hierarchy.
You have to tell, okay, this document contains the foundational legal constraints, and this document over here contains the technical routing specifications.
And most importantly, what to do when they conflict.
Exactly. If the technical specifications conflict with the legal constraints must take priority.
You are utilizing techniques like retrieval augmented generation or RAG.
RAG at you.
This ensures the AI pulls from a highly specific, mathematically weighted vector database of your choosing, rather than just its general internet training. You are defining the reality the model operates within.
It's like, it's like building the tracks for a high-speed train.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
If you don't engineer the curves, the banking, and the structural integrity of those tracks with absolute mathematical precision, the train, which is the AI in this case, is going to derail at 200 miles an hour.
It will fly right off the cliff.
You have to engineer the environment before the momentum begins. But, and here's the crazy part, even if you build the perfect track, it doesn't matter if the train doesn't know where it's going or why it's going there.
Which brings us to the second step of Rob's workflow.
Right. Role and intent definition.
According to Rob, the model must be given explicit personas, boundary constraints, and architectural rationales.
Boundary constraints.
Yes. The concept of boundary constraints is an ironclad rule in this context. A boundary constraint for his multi-vendor system might look something like this. Under no circumstances can the proposed data flow route through or be stored in jurisdictions subject to the U.S. Cloud Act.
You are literally building an invisible fence in the latent space of the model.
You are. And what is truly fascinating here is the psychological aspect of explaining the why to a machine.
Here's where it gets really interesting.
Rob mentions providing architectural rationales. It is not enough to just give the AI a rule. You must give it the intent behind the rule.
Okay, give me an example of what happens if you don't.
Well, if you just say, don't use AWS for this specific component.
AWS being Amazon Web Services, an American company.
Right. The AI might arbitrarily choose another US-based vendor like Azure or Google Cloud.
Which completely violates the same underlying legal principle.
Exactly. Because the AI was just trying to optimize for processing speed, and it didn't understand why you banned AWS.
Oh, wow. So you have to act like a psychological profiler for an artificial brain.
That is exactly what it is.
If you provide the architectural rationale like, saying, we must maintain complete digital sovereignty to protect against foreign surveillance, you are shifting the probabilistic weights of the model.
The AI now understands the philosophical intent.
The philosophy. That's wild. It can make autonomous decisions about minor routing issues that align with your underlying philosophy without needing to be micromanaged on every single API call.
Because you are no longer just writing text. You are managing machine intent.
Honestly, if I have to curate vector databases, build mathematical train tracks, define psychological boundary constraints, and constantly monitor the intent of a probabilistic machine, I would fire the AI and write the book myself.
Right.
I mean, how is this actually a productivity hack? This sounds infinitely more exhausting than just sitting down and typing out the chapters manually.
And that is the paradox of advanced AI usage. It is not necessarily a shortcut in terms of cognitive energy.
Not at all.
Writing manually allows you to enter a flow state. Your brain naturally synthesizes information as you type.
It's a rhythm.
But when you are orchestrating an AI, you are forced into a constant state of hypervigilance.
You can never relax.
No. The AI can generate the boilerplate code. It can rapidly synthesize 50 pages of legal text into a summary, and it can structure the foundational grammar of the book in seconds.
So the physical friction of typing is gone,
but the cognitive friction is exponentially higher.
Which leads to Rob's final and honestly most grueling step.
Continuous steering and quality control.
He notes that every single sentence in every architectural claim must be audited, like manually checked.
Everything.
When the output hallucinates, or when it drifts off scope, or when it oversimplifies sovereign data flows, Wright has to deconstruct why it is wrong, reframe the logic, and steer it back on track.
And deconstructing an AI's mistake in a domain like multi-vendor agentic systems requires immense mental energy.
I can only imagine.
Because when a sophisticated LLM makes an error about international data sovereignty, it does not write gibberish.
Right. It doesn't sound wrong.
It writes a beautifully flowing, highly confident paragraph that is fundamentally, structurally false.
It lies with total linguistic authority.
Yes. Figuring out why it generated that lie means reverse engineering the machine's logic. You have to sit there and ask yourself, did my context window drop a crucial paragraph about the CAC? Did the model's inherent bias toward resolving friction override my boundary constraint?
The machine hates friction.
It despises it.
That is what Rob specifically calls out regarding the danger of oversimplifying data flows. The AI's default setting is to make things sound easy and frictionless.
Because a frictionless narrative is statistically more common in its training data than a narrative about intractable geopolitical gridlock.
It's a people pleaser.
Exactly. But in the architecture of international data protection, friction is the reality.
You need friction.
Oversimplifying a data flow between the EU and China isn't just a stylistic error in a book. If that architecture is implemented, it is fatal to the system.
The company could get massive fines, or worse.
The AI constantly wants to build a smooth, unobstructed bridge between two servers. And Rob has to constantly intervene, rip up the bridge, and remind the AI that there is a heavily guarded border requiring checkpoints, encryption, and local audit logs.
Steering the AI away from its instinct to smooth things over is just an exhausting uphill battle. Diagnosing a technical error generated by an AI is often significantly harder than writing the paragraph from scratch.
It really is.
Which brings us to the profound conclusion Rob Van Linde reaches about the new paradigm we are entering. He states that working with generative models and multi-agent setups isn't delegating your brain.
Not even close.
It requires acting as a chief architect, a lead editor, and a strict quality controller all at once.
And this completely redefines the nature of knowledge work. As an industry, we must draw a hard, unambiguous line between automated push-button generation, which, as we said, yields generic trivia,
yeah,
and deep human-machine co-creation. The roles Rob outlines, architect, editor, controller, represent the future of how humans interact with information.
the physical, mechanical act of creation is being outsourced.
Yes, but the cognitive load, the orchestration of complex ideas, and the relentless verification of truth are now the primary tasks of the human worker.
And this brings us right back to our starting point. It brings us back to that desk, that cup of coffee, and the EU AI Act watermark at the bottom of the article.
Full circle.
When you understand the sheer volume of mental energy, the geopolitical balancing act, the context engineering, and the relentless steering that goes into a technical masterpiece like Rob's work, that watermark changes meaning completely.
It's no longer an asterisk implying a shortcut.
No.
If someone is doing this work correctly, navigating the complexities of agentic systems and data sovereignty, that watermark is a badge of intense orchestration.
A badge of honor, almost.
It proves that a human being took on the immense mental load required to guide, challenge, and shape these wild probabilistic systems into delivering rigorous and truthful work.
We started this deep dive exploring how the public misunderstands these new transparency labels. And through Rob's reality of architecting sovereign data flows, we have seen that true AI work is anything but a silver platter.
Definitely not.
It is context, it is intent, and it is continuous steering. The machine reflects the mind that drives it.
It is the difference between simply requesting an outcome and taking responsibility for the architecture of that outcome.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Rob leaves his readers with a direct challenge, and it is something you should mull over the next time you open up a generative model or an agentic framework. He asks, how are you managing the cognitive overhead of steering agentic systems in your daily workflows?
It's a great question.
Are you just typing a blunt prompt and hoping the machine does the thinking for you? Or are you willing to step up, put in the cognitive rigor, and become the chief architect of a true co-creation? Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the realities of the AI-assisted future. Keep questioning the shortcuts, and we will catch you next time.